Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Hello, hello. Right, welcome to Freedom of Species. We're bringing the animal advocacy airwaves to 3CR Community Radio, and you were just listening to Sally's show Out of the Pan. Nick, did you want to go into a bit more detail about that?
Yeah, so Sally's show is 12 till 1 every Sunday, and on the show today, Sally had Bonnie Hart, who's an intersex woman, discussing intersex issues and the recently passed Victorian laws. And the song that Sally finished with was Play That Country Music, combined with Rawhide by the Far Gone Beauties.
Awesome. Thank you for that. And today we have Ruby here. Hi, Ruby.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Good. Now, you've been here, this is like quite a few times.
Yeah. Fourth or something. Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Probably lost track at this point. Yeah.
And today's topic, we're talking about Japan, but more specifically, we're talking about like animal care in Japan, focusing on Nara Park and like animal cafes. But also, congratulations to Ruby because she recently just finished her PhD.
Thank you so much.
We got no sound effects, Sarah. Yeah.
Imagine applause.
And so your PhD, you've talked about it when you were last on in like 2024 with Nick talking about.
Yeah, probably Japan, wasn't the last. Probably was more the first time on, more than the last. But
okay, maybe not the last. Yeah, first time. And it was focused on like the veganism movement in Japan.
Yes. So I did a kind of an ethnographic research project. On the vegan movement in Japan, lived there in Tokyo for about a year, gathering data. And basically in my thesis, I just talk about, you know, the everyday realities for vegans living in Japan, the different challenges there are there. And then also, you know, how advocates kind of see as the most effective approach to get veganism to become more accepted and better accommodated in Japan. That's pretty much it. I won't ramble on about it for too long.
It does sound like a lovely, yeah. So when you're in Tokyo for a year, that's when you were doing all your research and like interviewing people and
what? I did interviews, and I also volunteered with an excellent organization called Veggie Project Japan, and they're a vegan advocacy organization, I suppose kind of similar to maybe like the Vegan Society UK or Vegan Australia, where they're focused mostly on creating vegan options and kind of having that like vegan infrastructural base, so it's easier for people to go vegan.
Yeah.
But they do a lot of different things. And yeah, so I volunteered with them for a year, and that's the field notes and my experiences that also form part of the data for my research.
Oh, nice. And then can I ask what like started the spark for Japan culture or like veganism in Japan? How did you first like start learning Japanese? Or
So I started learning Japanese in high school, and I was kind of, you know, really into like anime and manga and Japanese music, kind of all of the things that, I don't know if you guys have heard about the Cool Japan strategy, but basically it's like a deliberate strategy from the Japanese government to try and get foreigners interested in Japan and create Japan fans, quote unquote Japan fans.
There's quite a lot in Australia, right? It's a real thing.
Japan's pretty popular. The pop culture and stuff is really huge, I think, globally, and so I fell for that, and that kind of became my entry point. And then studied Japanese throughout high school, university, lived there on and off, and became interested in veganism in Japan after I kind of sort of tried being vegan myself in Japan for a bit and found it really, really difficult. That sparked my interest.
I used to like watch Japanese films like Studio Ghibli. Ghibli fan.
Love Studio Ghibli.
Or one of the songs later is like from a movie that I like loved in like high school, Your Name. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yes, I know Your Name.
It's
like
one of the popular like European, a lot of them watch it, and it's like the first like Japanese film that they watch.
Beautiful film.
But no, it's lovely. And recently in November last year, I visited Japan for like 2.5 weeks, and I went to Nara Park. So we'll talk a little bit about like my own experience there, but I never went to an animal cafe, but I was surprised. I did not know it was a thing until I didn't do my research. I just kind of was like, all right, I'll just go to Japan, see what's happening. And then there's like, streets of all these animal cafes. And I was like, what, there's capybaras, there's owls now, there's foxes. It's a bit wild. But I really did enjoy traveling there, and like the food was really good, but it was hard to find vegan options.
It is challenging.
But it was, it was good. Had to navigate Google Maps. Very fun.
When you said it was hard, did you try the Happy Cow app? Or?
Yes, I did. But also, I feel like location-wise, I'm just so used to like in New Zealand and Australia, like it's just one level. There's a train station, there's one level. But then like I'm looking for this like little vegan chain that does really good ramen. And then it's like in this massive mall above a train station. And then I'm trying to follow the directions, but I spent like an hour looking for it. Eventually I found it, but it's stuff like that. I'm like, oof. Or the best thing about the public transport is it meant that like in Tokyo, we would probably have to travel like 30, 40 minutes to try and find like a specific vegan place from like where we were staying. But then like we could do it quickly with public transport. But I did use Happy Cow like a lot. And then for some reason, my Instagram reels had become like vegan spots in Japan like 2 weeks before going. So I had a lot of them saved on my Google Maps.
That makes it easy.
That was my preparation. Nice. That was my studying. But yeah, I guess we will start with talking a little bit about Nara Park and the animal cafes. So I've done a little bit of like research online about like Nara Park and like the history of it, and then a bit of animal cafes. What do we feel like starting with? Should we toss
maybe
a coin?
Just while you're working that out, I also wanted to jump in that we do have the text line open. Ooh, so maybe we've got some listeners who are from Japan or have lived in or visited Japan and want to give any feedback on some of the different places you're talking about. So if you ever want to text in to Freedom of Species or any 3CR shows, the number is 0488 809 855. That is 0488 809 855, and we've got the text open ready to go.
I'm thinking maybe we'll start with Nara Park, because after like kind of finding out some stuff online, I was like, oh, Nara Park, I started with that, and then I looked at animal cafes and I was like, whew, okay, there was a lot more going on there they didn't realize. So we'll start with the lighter animal welfare issues of Nara Park. But basically, what is it? It's a popular tourist attraction, and it features like the sacred bowing deer. So there's a bunch of deer that live like an hour train ride from Osaka, and a lot of people who visit Osaka, they'll like go to Nara Park during the day. And it's full of like these roaming deer, and they are like wild, but over time they've learned to like bow their head to you. And often we feed them like deer crackers. And so that's how they've become like they would bow their head and you'd give them. So they've kind of been trained and like domesticated.
So when you say trained, like has someone trained them to do that, or they've just learnt that if they do that they get treats?
They've learnt it. So basically when I visited, there's like a few little stalls that sell these deer crackers, and you can like buy them and then you feed them to the deer. But I don't know how it originally started, but it had kind of started as a way like, okay, oh, I think because strong like Japanese culture is to like bow. And then they would do that, and the deers would like kind of copy, I guess, in a way. And then they've become like, okay, you bow and then you get a cracker. So that's kind of a habit that has now been like taught to them. So then when you walk up to them, they automatically, some will start bowing to you, because that's their way of being like, now give me a cracker, which is fair enough. But about now in Nara, like because of a recent record in like 2025, there's about 1,460 deer that live there. And yeah, can talk a little bit about the history of it. So I've been to Nara Park once, and then have you been, Nick? You've been in Japan?
No, I had flights. I think it was like April 2020, but that didn't work out too well. Or it was kind of somewhere around then. So yeah, I definitely had flights booked. I'd love to go there, but no, haven't made it in there yet.
And then Ruby, were you telling me twice?
Yes, I've been twice. Yeah. But the most recent time was in 2019, so still
and that
quite
was
a while
real,
ago.
But it's still like a real proper visit, not just a few days or something like that. You were there for the...
Not in Nara. Both times I visited Nara, I've only been there for the day.
Oh, no, I mean Japan.
But Japan, I've been both,
Like staying a whole year there.
2019, were you in Tokyo, or was it
2019, I was living in Sendai on exchange for 6 months,
Oh, my gosh. Oh, so you spent a lot of time there overall.
Yeah, like a year and a half total living, and then trips...
Yeah.
A bunch of trips, yeah.
Yeah.
Exciting. Well, my 2.5 weeks is nothing. So a little bit about the history of Nara Park. It was like first established in 1800s in 1880 during Japan's Meiji period. But it has its cultural and spiritual roots for the Nara Park, like, dare go back a lot further, about like 1,300 years ago when Nara, so it used to be Japan's like first like permanent capital. So I'm told. And yeah, the Nara deer are considered these like sacred messengers of the god and like the Shinto religion. And there's also a bit of like Buddhism strengthening the protection of the Nara deer back then, even though it didn't like create a sacred status. Like the Japanese practiced like a blended system of like this Buddhism and also like a Shinto. I know like very brief, not much about it. So feel free to like jump in if you want to like dive deeper into it. Or, like,
no, it's really pretty good.
But yeah, there's a bit of an overlap there, and it helped hold like this deer sacred status, which basically meant like killing the deers was like prohibited, and then it was seen as like illegal, morally wrong, and sometimes it was like punishable by death. So it was taken like pretty seriously.
Yeah.
But then like after World War II, Japan, like, they officially changed their deer's status, so they were now from sacred to like national treasure. So it meant like they were no longer considered like this divine sacred animal that was protected, and it meant that it wouldn't be like illegal if you were to kill one of the lovely deers. But they were protected in Nara Park under like the natural monuments, which meant that there's, yeah, we'll talk about it a little bit later, but there's specific parts in the park that are like the main popular attraction parts, and like the deers are protected there, so there's to be like no like moving them or like culling and stuff like that. But today, yeah, there's over about 1,000 deer that live around there, and they are like quite tame and friendly, and they do the bowing to the visitors, and there's a lot of like it's very popular. Like there's a lot of people that visit it day in, day out, and there's like vendors that sell all these crackers and stuff like that. But basically there's no like fencing and stuff around, so they just basically free roam Nara and stuff like that. I remember when I like visited, I like hopped off the train station and then we've got a dog loose in the studio. That's the background sound. It's exciting. But I remember, so when I visited Nara, it would have been, yeah, November last year, and then people were like, I'll just go for the day, and I was like, all right. So we took the train, and then we popped off, and then I didn't realise that they wouldn't be, like, fenced in, like a protected nature area. I, like, hopped off the train, I was like, oh my gosh, there's a deer, and they were just, like, walking around the train station, coming up to people, like, doing their bows, and I was like, oh, okay. And then, like, the more you walk, the more you got to see, like, a lot of these deers and stuff, and it was interesting. Like, you see a lot of people really excited to see like deers just like around the streets and stuff like that, but then the more I walked around, the more I was like, oh, I see them like in the gutter, or I saw a lot of like elderly deer that weren't getting any attention or love, that had like precious sores and stuff like that, and a lot of them, all their antlers are gone, so they guess they kind of like chop the antlers off to like stop fighting and stuff like that, and to like prevent them hurting each other. But it just made me like slightly sad. But there are really cute ones that will come up and bow, and they get a lot of attention. But yeah,
I wonder if they're taking the antlers off also is for the human protection as well.
I think probably. So yeah, because yeah, there's a lot of what was the Prime Minister saying about Nara Park? We were talking about it before. Did you want to dive in about it?
Yeah,
a hot take.
Yes. Well, so obviously it's a hugely popular tourist destination. So I'm not like an expert in Nara specifically, so I'm not exactly sure. But obviously, yeah, they're trying to keep tourists safe from, especially I think it's maybe like the September, like August to like October period is like the male, like the mating season, I think. I can't remember. And so they have, you know, the male deer will become like quite aggressive during that time. So they probably want to trim the antlers. I'm not sure if they receive anesthetic or if they need anesthetic for that procedure or what exactly happens. But what I guess I wanted to talk about a little bit was the Prime Minister, the new Prime Minister of Japan, she's quite hard right. She considers herself, you know, like the Japanese Margaret Thatcher, basically. Mm-hmm. That's like one of her biggest inspirations. Mm-hmm. And she kind of won the favour of the Japanese populace because her party, the Liberal Democratic Party, which has been in power for a really long time in Japan.
So she's far right and they're called Liberal Democratic.
Yeah, that's, I know. I know.
Seem to translate. Yeah. I mean, I guess we have the same in Australia.
Exactly, the Liberal Party. They're called the LDP, the Liberal Democratic Party. But in the most recent Japanese election, far right, even more extreme right parties gained a lot of momentum. Like, for example, Sanseto, which is basically the Japanese equivalent of One Nation, who ran like a really hard, like anti-foreigner campaign line, I suppose, went from having like one seat in the, I can't remember if it's the upper or lower house, but they went from like one seat to like 12 in one election. So a huge shift to the right. And Takaichi has won favor with the Japanese populace by kind of also buying into this anti-foreigner sentiment. And in a recent speech that she gave, she talked about, she referenced this video of a supposedly foreign man. It's been unconfirmed whether this man is like foreign or a Japanese man kicking one of the deer in Nara Park. There's this video. He like goes up to this deer and then he kicks it like twice. And everyone around him is like, what the hell is this person doing? Mm. And there have also been other reports of tourists, you know, hurting or teasing the deer, although I would assume that this isn't something that just tourists do. I think probably there's also a lot of Japanese people that do it. But in Takaichi Sanae's speech, she is from Nara originally. She basically says, there are despicable people who have come here and kick the deers. If there are foreigners coming to Japan for tourism, purposely hurting things that Japanese people hold sacred, don't you think that something has gone too far? And what I'd just like to draw attention to here is her use of the word thing. She calls them mono, which is the Japanese word for thing, rather than saying dobutsu or like animal or, you know, another similar word like that. And not only does she use deer here as a way to kind of like foment anti-foreigner.
So it's not just anti-immigrant, it's also anti-tourist as well.
Anti-tourist, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
And there's been a huge
issue. You
hear
less of that in Australia, of anti-tourists.
Yes.
Anti-people living
anti-immigrant.
Here.
Anti-immigrant.
Yeah.
It's both in Japan, I think, because there's been such a huge, like, over-tourism issue. Obviously, there are people who go to Japan and they don't know the rules super well. Japan has a, you know, I suppose more strict etiquette and way that you do things as opposed to Australia, for example. And there are definitely people who do stupid things and disrespect sacred sites. I'm
probably
not denying that at
Australian
all.
Probably especially Australian people. I don't
know. Of course, yeah. We are the problem. but I also thought it was really interesting how she specifically draws attention to the deer and pretends to, well, I'm sure she does, she cares a lot about the deer, but how in Japan the Nara deer are really the exception to the rule in terms of animal welfare. And as Savannah was mentioning, perhaps it's not even really that great the conditions that the Nara deer live in, if there's, you know, a lot of them kind of roaming around outside, and some of them with sores and stuff and their antlers trimmed. Japan has really quite poor animal welfare laws, even for animals that are supposedly held sacred or that are, you know, cute and like charismatic animals, things like foxes, owls, monkeys, other creatures that are big like tourist attractions in animal cafes or zoos and things like that. And so it, to me, as obviously like an animal, you know, critical animal studies person, as a vegan, hearing her say that and kind of using that statement to, you know, direct anger towards foreigners, I just feel like You want to say, like, look at everything else that's happening in Japan. Look at how you treat your non-human animals in farms, most of farms in Japan are factory farms. Look at animal cafes, which we'll talk about in a bit, and, you know, look at zoos, all of these instances. Even pet welfare is not as, I don't want to say developed, but pets don't have, there's been, like, issues with, like, euthanasia and things like that, which a lot of activists have drawn attention to, so, that's what I wanted to bring up.
Maybe we should take the first song, definitely. Right. I'm sure we've got lots to say coming out of that, but, maybe we should have a song, so I thought...
Is this the Nara Alt-J song?
No, I thought we'd finish with that one, just because it's the longest one. So I thought maybe we could start with... Ruby's one, The Mushroom Empire in the Arms of the Beast. Anything you want to say about the song?
This is a song that my friend showed me, and I think it's really cool. That's it.
Nice. Looking forward to hearing it.
There we go. You're listening to Freedom of Species on 3CR.
Freedom of Species would like to thank Project Fresh Start for their financial support of this program. Project Fresh Start provides free plant-based food to the community, with a focus on providing healthy, fresh plant-based food and education around healthy eating and living in a way that sustains the individual, the community, the animals, and the planet. To find out more about our community lunches and programs, check out projectfreshstart.org.au.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Community Radio. We've got Ruby, Savannah and Nick discussing animals in Japan and Nara Park specifically. I guess the couple of questions just from the opening, and I might have just skipped over this, but maybe it's a good recap for listeners. I was curious why the deer specifically, and like Ruby said, not other animals, but I think you maybe touched on in terms of certain religions. But the other question I had was around the size of Nara. Like, it sounds like it's not just a tourist place that people come, like plenty of people live there as well. I was curious about like the size of it, and is it a lot of people living there? Is it mainly a tourist thing? Or
Well, it is like a town, but I think it's like a city, because
it's a city.
There's a lot of people that just live there and have their everyday life, but then it's also this massive tourist attraction is the Nara Park. And so there is like a little park area, and there's also a lot of like farmlands and stuff around there. But yeah, it's a fully functioning city, and there's a lot of people that live there, like the Prime Minister herself.
Yeah, that's what made me think of that. On the Prime Minister as well, I did just want to briefly mention that I just see a lot of parallels with that rhetoric around the live export campaign in Australia, where it's like a lot of people who... Yeah, like you said, like kind of the Prime Minister kind of using language which suggests she maybe doesn't care about or hasn't thought so much about sort of animals as like subjective individuals rather than things and that kind of thing, but then really gets kind of, tries to get people riled up about this issue, but like similar with the live export issue in Australia, whereas a lot of people who might not otherwise care that much about animals all of a sudden do when it's done in Indonesia, for example. And it was just kind of an interesting one, because often, like, obviously you've got the racial dynamics. I know like Animals Australia, for example, had an ad with like a white slaughterhouse worker, and there's kind of, I just felt there was a lot of sort of implicit language going, this white slaughterhouse worker in Australia is going to do things better than these Indonesian slaughterhouses, which are people of colour. And I felt like, there was a lot of, not necessarily intentional, but I think underlying racism in that campaign. But it's kind of interesting seeing that in a different racial context. And like, are they going after certain ethnic groups, or it's more just like non-Japanese people, including Asian or African or, European or whatever? I was curious about kind of the racial dynamics of that sort of messaging.
I think it's mostly, it's just non-Japanese people in general, but probably with more of a focus on like Chinese tourists as well, which I think are probably one of the biggest groups of tourists to come to Japan. Mm-hmm. But what you were saying briefly, Nick, just briefly, I just wanted to say, I think that same kind of rhetoric can be used against Japan as well a lot of the time, to be like, oh, Japan's so backwards in terms of its like animal welfare laws, and like
or the killing of the whales as well.
That's a huge issue. I feel like that would deserve its entirely or an episode like the dolphin hunting. But I just kind of wanted to just reiterate that, like, issues of, like, animal abuse and poor animal welfare are things that we have in Australia too. Like, we might have better protections in some regards for specific types of animals. But this system, like factory farming, the systems that hurt animals the most in Japan are also, like, a colonial project from the USA, like factory farming imported from the USA, things like that. So, you know, it's a universal problem. And, you know, as much as we can, you know, sit here and criticize Japan's animal welfare and you know, factory farms and slaughterhouses and things like that, it's nothing that's unique to Japan, really. Yeah. Like,
and I think we can absolutely criticize the sort of the anti-foreigner sentiment, because, again, we've been parallels to Australia are more familiar with. I think that live export of, like, the problem is in Indonesia.
Yes.
We don't look at the problems going on in Australia and then, like, the number of cows slaughtered here and the kind of issues going on here.
Yeah, the way that
and we
treated,
instead say, oh, no, it's actually the slaughterhouses in Indonesia.
Yeah.
It's the dolphin slaughter in Japan. And then we don't make any changes here. And it sounds like that's kind of what the Japanese Prime Minister is advocating for. Like, oh, we treat animals really well. It's a problem is foreigners or tourists.
Yeah.
And then Japan doesn't make any, if that is your focus, you don't have any focus on, like, people within Japan and institutions and policies actually improve things for animals as well.
Yeah, that's right. And I think also, you know, she says all of this stuff, but then I thought maybe, Savannah, you'd want to talk about the culling issue with deers around Nara as well.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, some of the main welfare issues and stuff with, like, the quality of life of these deers is, I'll just, like, summarize it in bullet points. So there's, like, they're allowed to free roam. So there are parks and streets and temples in nearby forests. But, like, with that comes problems. Like, with free roaming, there's a lot of traffic and stuff going around because, yeah, Nara is a city. A lot of people, like, there is often, like, traffic accidents and stuff like that. The deer, I've seen them, they just, like, walk. They don't care about cars. They're like, I own this town.
No fear of God.
But then, you know, sometimes in, like, rainy, dark morning, you know, it happens. Like, a lot of them can, like, be traffic accidents. And there's, no fences, no enclosure, like, restricting them from dangerous parts like that. And then there's a Nara Deer Preservation Foundation, and so they do have the responsibility to look after and, like, rescue some of the Nara deer, but the issue with that is they only, like, treat, like, the, like, immediately, like, really severe ones, like, if they've got broken limbs or if they're, like, kind of on their way out, like, there's a lot of stuff like that, like, staff or people report it, and then they'll, like, come in, okay, and they'll, like, come and rescue them and, like, try and save them and stuff like that. But then there's a lot of stuff that goes untreated. Like, if you've got, like, they've got, like, minor injuries, or there's, like, fight wounds, or there's, like, pressure sores, or if they've got, like, a lot of them eat a bit of plastic because there's, like, a lot of rubbish and stuff around, or they eat food that's not really good for them, and then they get, like, tummy problems, and then so they're just kind of sleepy and sick. And so there are, like, a lot of stuff like that, that a lot of deaths that go untreated. And also there's, like, statistics that show, like, how many deaths per year. Like, in 2023, there was 179 just natural deaths, for not including culling, and 87 of them were illness, 34 of them were vehicles, and, like, the remaining percentage was not, like, fully diagnosed, because there's no, like, monitoring that they have to, like, fully be like, why did they die and stuff like that. But there is culling with the Nara deer. So there's, like, over 180 per year that are culled outside of, like, protective areas. And the main reason, there's a lot of, like, deer moving around, roaming to, like, farmlands and eating crops. I would say in the city, there's, like, limited grass. They eat, like, leaves and acorns and grass and need water and the deer crackers to survive. But there is, like, big overpopulation pressures and stuff like that. So a lot of them are, like, malnutritioned, and they're not getting the food that they need. And some of them look kind of thin and skinny and not, like, full and plump as, like, a deer should look. So that may lead them to try and, like, free roam further to try and find food. But because they're outside of the protective, like, sacred zones or, like, the main tourist attraction parts, they're allowed to be culled and stuff by, like, farmers. Or there's a middle ground. There's, like, the protected sacred parts, and then there's, like, an outer ring where it is, like, live capture and, like, bring them back and stuff like that. But also, because there's an overpopulation, there is a lot of culling of, like, the outside
ring when they're free roaming and stuff like that, which is, yeah, a little bit sad.
So they're
yeah.
eating like plant-based crops, right? There's not, it's not a interference yeah. with animal agriculture in this case. It's actually eating,
yeah, eating
corn,
plant-based
whatever
crops.
It may be. Yep,
yeah,
okay.
Rice, yeah,
probably.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so there's just a lot of like, yeah, nutritional imbalance, or because they're so domesticated, there's a lot of like behavioral conditioning that happens to these like wild animals, like having to bow, or sometimes there can be like in the seasons where it's like mating season, they can get more frustrated and push and bite and like chase people for food, and it's kind of the loss of like that natural yeah foraging behavior, because I just see them and they're like bowing kind of like street beggars, and it was like kind of wild to see. Or you see, I've got like photos on my phone, I just thought it was really interesting, of them like outside like little convenience shop just sitting down, lying down, and I'm like, oh, these poor. And it's always like, yeah, the old ones, and yeah, everyone's like so enthralled with like how amazing to see them interacting, but I saw that and I was like, okay, there must also be like, this must not be working for them. I think because from New Zealand, there's just massive protections in place. Like, there is, like, we have massive agriculture farming in New Zealand, and there's like a lot of like farm animals that have terrible conditions, but our native animals are very protected and very looked after. So it's kind of interesting how like farm animals, we don't treat them well at all. But then you've got your native animals, we have all our kiwis and all our birds, and they have like massive protective areas and like predator free, like they do a lot of trapping and stuff to get rid of like possums, sorry Australia, they really don't like possums in New Zealand, yeah. And like rats and stuff like that. And then they have, yeah, like people can visit, but it has to be like very specific times, and you can't visit during the night, and there's like a kiwi are very kept separate, stuff like that. There's just a lot more protections in place. So when I like came and saw the free roaming, it was, yeah, it was very interesting to see.
I think like a more like general problem of these touristy places is that when they become dependent on it, like tourism tends to go in ebbs and flows, and has like busier times of the year and quieter times of the year. And so once they become dependent on that, then it's like they might be eating well during the busy times of year, but then when it's quieter, like the number of people visiting is like not enough to sustain that number of deer. So it's always kind of going to be, yeah, a bit of a problem. And I think it's similar to Australia. Again, Australia has lots of issues with like killing free living animals, but yeah, I always think like we often just go for the I don't know if it's the easiest, but just we go straight to killing when we could think about like, could we put fences up around these crops and those kind of like non-lethal solutions, which might be more expensive, but it's like, yeah, it's always just like, oh, we'll just kill them if there's any conflict.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like overpopulation problems, you can easily just like remove the male deer's testicles so they can't breed, stuff like that.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Like I know there's in Australia, in like the Macedon Ranges, I work out there, and there's like a wild goat problem, and a lot of the council will just do a lot of like culling instead of like maybe be just stopping their reproductive organs, so then they can no longer reproduce, but then they could live out their lives there. But it's tricky, like how do you navigate that? And then I don't know if many governments are going to give funding for that, because it will cost a lot more than just culling them.
Yeah, it costs, and yeah, like until animals are valued, that we're like, well, of course we're not going to kill an individual because there's too many of their species, like we're going to do something else. But yeah, until we have that sort of cultural change about how animals are valued, that yeah, governments will stick with the cheapest solution. Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. Shall we talk about some animal cafes?
Or
another
be,
song?
Yeah, that might
another
be a good song. Time. Yeah, let's go to your song, Savannah.
Okay, it's from your name. It's like the main theme song, and it's really nice. And it reminds me of my high school days of watching anime.
All right. And the what was the artist? Or it's from the movie?
It's actually in Japanese, so
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah,
how
that's
to
right.
Read.
I couldn't work that out either. From
wait, can you translate, Ruby?
Oh, Ruby, there you go. Yeah, yeah. There it is. There, right there.
Oh, it doesn't say the artist.
Does it not?
Does it just say your name song in Japanese?
I think this is Kana Boon, though. I'm pretty sure.
Kana Boon.
Oh, is it Radwimps? Radwimps, that's who it is.
Radwimps. Okay, thank you.
Freedom of Species thanks Animal Free Science Advocacy for their financial support of this program. Animal Free Science Advocacy works to create a future where no animals are harmed in the name of science. And scientific progress is advanced through animal-free research methods. Become a member today by visiting animalfreesci.org.au. That's animalfreesci.org.au.
Hello and welcome back to Freedom of Species. We are talking about Japan and now we're talking about animal cafes in Japan. We just recently were talking about Nara Park and now we're going to dive in. So animal cafes, I've never been to one before, but I have seen the advertisements. I found myself in Japan walking along a little street and like, oh, it's cute markets. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's all these cafes. And then, oh my gosh, this man's holding an owl and stuff like that. Have you ever been to any?
The only one that I've been to is a cat cafe, which is the traditional, I think that's from where they all started.
It was the
cat
OG.
Cafes. Yeah. And the one that I went to was like rescued cats off the street. And then it was an effort to rehome them as well. So I think that was a little bit more ethical than some of these other cafes.
Yeah, definitely. Like I was kind of searching up like what are some of the common ones and like a little bit less common and definitely most popular or start originally as with like cats and then have like dog cafes, rabbits and hedgehogs. I saw a capybara one when I was in Japan, wow. But they have like owls or they have reptiles. So they've got snakes and lizards. They have like a lot of birds, apparently penguins in very rare cases, which I was like shocked to find. Yeah. Otters as well.
I've seen an otter.
They have mini pigs, but what do they call them? Is it?
Yeah, they call them... I don't know if they're micro, but they're like micro pigs. Like they're pigs that are supposed to stay at a small size.
Do they throughout stay their lives, or are they just piglets?
That's well, what I'm confused about. I think there are smaller breeds of pigs, but I don't think they ever stay that like tiny little lap sized, which is what they start off as and what they run around in the cafe as. But then once they age out of that, the mini pig chain. It's called Mipigu, is like Mipigu. They like claim that they rehome these pigs to like loving families, but like
aware I haven't seen a pig while I was roaming.
Like a pig as a pet in Japan. I think they're very high maintenance, you know, it's like a toddler for life, and they require a lot of stimulation and not really apartment friendly, I would say, probably. So there are concerns there. And then, you know, I think also you can just kind of say anything, can't you?
It's a bit like the greyhound industry where they kind of point to, oh, look at this one has been rehomed, this one's been rehomed. And then it's like, but what about this one, this one, this one? So it's like, I don't know how much they kind of do this PR, but like...
I would be highly suspicious.
That they could like point to, look at these three pigs who have been rehomed. It's like, but what about all the others as well? Like, so sometimes it can be a small proportion to kind of... overlook the bigger issue.
Also, side note with like greyhound racing in Australia, I remember the rehoming organization did like a Facebook post during summer when it was like extreme heat weather, being like how to look after your dog in extreme heat weather, and it was like don't take it more than 24 degrees like if it outside. But then the same organization that have their greyhound racing continue. I was like, interesting. I remember I saw a Georgie Parcell or something post about it, and I was that's fascinating.
It is hard because you want to support the rescue, but then I feel like sometimes when you're working with that industry to rehome, they're hesitant to criticize the industry, which is kind of the source of the problem in the first place.
And one last one that they have is foxes. So they have foxes cafes. And then you were saying, so you've experienced like a fox, was it not a cafe, but it was like a fox.
It was not a cafe. Yeah. There's this place on Mount Zao, which is up in Miyagi Prefecture where I did my exchange, called Fox Village, Kitsune no Mura. And I had seen footage of it. I'd seen like videos of it from like Japan vloggers, like foreigners living in Japan who go to all these different places and like come visit this place. And from what they showed of it, it seemed pretty good. The appeal of Fox Village is that it's like a really large enclosure and foxes kind of run around free in it. And you can, there's like a specific area where you can feed them. You're not really supposed to touch them unless they like come up to you. So there's pretty decent rules around that part of it. And that's really all I saw from the videos. But when I actually went there, there was this whole enclosure area beforehand where they had a whole bunch. It was like a puppy farm. Like, it really reminded me of a puppy farm. It was just like wire cages with maybe like a small plank of wood on one part of it and foxes pacing up and down in the cage before you enter the main area, which had then become like quite overcrowded with foxes. And there was even like foxes kind of sitting in these like cages or sitting in these small boxes chained up. And then it said, like in English and Japanese, like this fox is for touching only. Like this is the fox for touching.
Wow.
It said like, yeah, used for touching. And then they have these like sessions that you can pay extra for where you sit down and then person brings out this fox and they like pass them around so all the people can touch them.
Wow.
And so I think the animal cafes kind of operate in a similar way where the appeal of it isn't to like try and understand these creatures on their level, but basically to try and touch and kind of get some like enjoyment out of, you know, being around these animals and petting these animals without really considering what the animal themselves wants. Like I know with the owl cafes, for instance, owls are nocturnal creatures, right? But these cafes are open during the day and they're chained up to these like fake branches and kept awake during the day with like these harsh bright lights on them all the time. And so, you know, I'm sure they're being fed appropriate diets, I would hope. And there are worse conditions for animals to be in, you know, they're not living in like a factory farm, but it's pretty,
it's not what they're ignorant of
their natural behaviors.
And like the fox thing you mentioned, that is that purely just a for-profit company? Like it's not. And I think that is kind of
the issue.
And
that's what I thought. I thought it would be like a free-range, like a fox sanctuary or something. Like, because foxes are native to Japan. They're not like an invasive species like they are here in Australia as well. So I thought maybe it would be more of that kind of a thing. But no, it's
that's quite like clear cut, because I feel like even when it is a rescue situation, I still like, I think probably the pros outweigh the cons, but I'm just like, you open a cafe that's open to the public, like a cat cafe, for example, and you're rehoming cats, which is obviously the best case scenario. I'm still always a bit like squirmy, because I'm like, again, you're letting anyone in, like you don't know how they're going to react to the animals, like if they're going to be like hurting them, like kids or whatever else. And so, yeah, again, it's kind of like a complicated one. But yeah, that one, it's just purely like, it's purely just like not allowing the foxes to live a free life for the benefit of humans who want to pat them, basically.
It's part of this kind of like kawaii thing. And like iyashi as well is this Japanese word that means like calming or soothing. I think sometimes animals can be thought of as like iyashi and like something that can help soothe humans, that makes humans feel good over, you know, then that's prioritized over what the animal themselves would want out of the situation. And I think that's, animal cafes, like places like the Fox Village, maybe Nara Park as well, and also like zoos and stuff, which tend to have also a poorer quality of care in Japan, can tend to fall into that category. Aquariums as well.
Even we have that like elsewhere in Australia and elsewhere, where we have like dogs, for example, coming in to visit workplaces, and the research is always like, oh, this makes workers less stressed, and that's kind of end of, therefore it's a good thing. And like critical animal studies of like researchers have said, but is there any evidence the dogs enjoy it as well? Like, so that we never even consider that. It's just like, well, if humans enjoy it, that's the end of the story. Like, I know that's like visiting people in offices is quite low in terms of like maybe the hierarchy of concern we might have. But I think we also need to go, not just do humans like this. Yes, we'll let the animals do it regardless of what, of like flipping it over. Like, well, are the animals enjoying this and trying to view it more from the animals' perspective? Yeah,
exactly. I'm glad we can talk about it today, because it's nice to, put our foot in the other shoe. That's a bad example. But, think about the, into the hoops. Think about, the animals and, like, their experiences and what's natural, not natural for them. I think, why it's become so popular is, like, all this kawaii, like, the cuteness, and then, like, the tourism, like, demand, and then wanting, like, unique experiences. I think that's why now they have, like, owls, and they have, like, reptiles and birds and otters, which is wild.
It's like a Joe Exotic kind of a thing, right? And you get to have this encounter with an animal that you'd normally only see, like, in a documentary. but you can like see them up close and touch them. Like, I understand the appeal, but
But it's interesting. I'll just quickly cover some of like the welfare points of concerns. Like, a lot of these animals, like, they don't really get breaks. Like, every when people are visiting these cafes, they have like 30 minutes to an hour, and they're always fully booked out. Like, I remember we like saw a little dog one, and we went up and they're like, no, we've been booked out for days. And I was like, oh, okay. And it's so you visit and you have this time, and there's a lot of people around, and all these animals, they don't really get a break, so they just got stress and overstimulation from all these people coming in and petting them. And you think about it, normally like snakes and reptiles, they're not used to people in the natural environment coming in and petting them, and then like put in inappropriate environments, like owls that are on like fake trees and stuff like that, or foxes chained in cages and stuff like that, and they have like limited ability to like escape interactions. Like the fox, this is the petting one, but then does it get swapped out? Does it have a break, or does it this one's like, sorry, you have to be touched today for all of today. But yeah, and they like diet and feeding practices. Sometimes there's been like evidence of like unnatural diets and stuff like that, or like inconsistent veterinary like care and monitoring and stuff like that. I think there are, I don't know much about the laws, but from what I was like finding out online, it's that there were just weak laws around like the animal welfare and like the care for them, and there wasn't that much like monitoring and like stuff like that. There's also like a lot of breeding problems. Like a lot of people like breed them for like entertainment. So they're like, oh, this one's really good. It's nice and friendly. We're going to breed this one with another one. And then it's like, also, it's not always clear exactly where the supply chain's coming from, where they get them from. And there's been other stuff about like more exotic and unsuitable like species and stuff like that, if this should be like the environment. Like, I'm trying to think, they say penguin cafe, but I haven't done too much research. I'm like, I can't even imagine that. Like, what would their
I haven't heard
have
of
to be
one.
Cold That's... right, would people have to come in with jackets or And there's also like hygiene stuff and like disease risk, because there's just so much people coming into contact, and maybe they've gone to other cafes and petted other animals, and if they sanitized and got their hands all good before they come in and like pet all these other species and stuff like that. But or they're like, you think about it, like a lot of these animals, we see them when they're really cute and sweet, but like when they age, like the pigs and stuff, we don't know what entirely happens to them when they're like no longer profitable.
Yeah,
stuff like that. But yeah, it's interesting. Like, I didn't manage to get into a cafe while I was there, but seeing it all, I thought it was fascinating. Like the branding and like the advertising. I think so. After like me doing a little bit of online stuff, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm actually But it's just fascinating, like the appeal of it, or like the branding of it and stuff, like walking around.
We better wrap things up to make way for rotations. So stay tuned for that, for some music. And the closing song we have is Nara by Alt J. Anything you want to say about the song, Ruby?
It's just a beautiful song. It's not really about Nara, but it's about gay rights, pretty much, I think. And one of the titular lyrics is, to be a deer in Nara is to be thought of as, to be protected and, not prosecuted by various hostile governments.
All right.
Okay, well, thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.